When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Are you an athlete that's tested under WADA or USADA and is looking for various excuses of why you pop positive? James, what are some good ones?
Oh, there's a ton of good ones. For instance, if you test positive for nandrolone, it's possible that you ate a burrito that contained pork from a cryptorchid boar. The odds are near zero, but not zero.
Okay. What if you took Tren?
Oxtail.
What if you pop positive for Cenazolol, Winnie?
Your girlfriend's a bodybuilder. She uses Winnie. You kiss your girlfriend. You test positive for Winnie.
What about HCG?
HCG secreting tumor.
Well, this is pretty good. We have a few more up our sleeve as well. So for this not medical advice, not serious podcast, stay tuned. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. Today, we are talking about doping. So with the Paris Olympics, I guess about a month away at the time of recording this, a lot of athletes have made headlines for positive drug tests. So those reports are actually made public after they go to court and go through arbitration.
Yep.
So we have info on a couple of those more famous cases and also some of the more recent cases. So we're going to be talking about pork decoritos and everything in between today.
Yeah. You know, like you said, this is a PED podcast. And I'd say certainly our inspiration is taken from our good friend Derek, who has the More Plates, More Dates YouTube channel. Hopefully this gives people some interesting takeaways on how they can dope as they go to compete in drug-tested sporting events. No, just kidding.
Or untested sporting events, because at the time of recording this, I think it was yesterday, I saw the Enhanced Games, the two co-founders there, were on the Joe Rogan Experience. So I have not listened to that yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, certainly. So if only they had, you know, some experienced individuals like us to oversee the not doping that will go on, because Enhanced Games doesn't really have to be enhanced. It just doesn't waste money drug testing, because drug testing an athlete can cost $400, $500 for a WADA compliant drug test. And I think what they were trying to do is give that money to the athletes instead that are actually earning the money, rather than big media or big drug testing, big pharma, whatever the case is. But to be clear, we are against any sort of doping or drugs or whatnot, but if someone is prescribed something at a clinical dose from their physician or nurse practitioner, then certainly I think they should be allowed to compete. And people don't really realize it, but that is the case. A lot of your favorite, especially older NBA, NFL, NHL players, they are on anabolic steroids. It's just that they're medications that happen to be prescribed.
Yeah. And for people who, like, I think one of the big things they talk about with the Enhanced Games is instead of people sort of doing this in the dark without oversight, they want medical oversight. So if someone chooses to put compound into their body, we're going to talk about, you know, harm reduction, risk mitigation. Of course, we're going to preface that with like, hey, I definitely recommend against this, but if this is the lifestyle that you're going to use, it's no different than prescribing, you know, PrEP. You know, it's like, well, this is the lifestyle you're going to live. We want to reduce the harms that could occur because of that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of physicians in the community, medical doctors, MDs and DOs, that encourage and support this. Thomas O'Connor is one of them, anabolic doc. And he even published a little study that kind of talks about some of this harm reduction that should take place for people that utilize those things. There's a lot of hesitancy. We recently published an article in the Curious Open Access Journal that talks about this as well with Phil Hollebeck and Alec McCarthy. So we'll link to that again below that we pretty recently published earlier this year. But if I'm a entity, whether it is, you know, WADA or the Olympic Games or the Enhanced Games, then I would want medical doctors overseeing these items and competent medical doctors. And yes, you can have other people that are kind of outside the clinical sphere, like Derek, that can talk about these things and help promote the games because, yes, it's a business. You have to at least not lose money to continue doing it. But really, you want, you don't want to be an echo chamber. You want people who are, you know, having very different opinions than you, like endocrinologists, rather than just having people in the functional and natural health sphere.
Yeah, I think you would ideally want the same level of expertise that you see when the expert witnesses are called in these arbitration cases. You know, these are people that are subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. So like getting that level of oversight into a Olympic team, which some countries probably better than others.
Yeah.
Some countries have less resources. Some athletes have more or less resources, more or less sponsorships. But standardizing something to where, you know, at least each athlete has access, maybe that's sort of built into the enhanced games where it's like, you know, hey, we can look at this and put you in a category of low, medium risk, high risk, or like, you know, hey, you need to like pull the plug on whatever you're taking right now because your like life is in danger sort of thing.
You can't just do functional health tests like Oats tests and Dutch tests to tell if they're healthy or not?
Those Dutch tests would be very interesting because with a lot of androgens, you're going to have pretty low SHBG. Mm-hmm. But if you're on only synthetic androgens, no testosterone, SHBG is low, testosterone is low, it may look like you have low T.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
If someone is on trenbolone replacement therapy.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what would cross-detect for which assay.
Yeah, I don't know how sensitive the Dutch is as far as like differentiating between like nandrolone and trenbolone and testosterone or other synthetics.
Yeah, it's good at telling the differences between, you know, different estrogen metabolites and different mm-hmm. androgen metabolites. So you'd think that it has at least decent sensitivity in between steroids, but I suppose I wouldn't be shocked if DHT derivatives cross-react as dihydrotestosterone. And if it's an immunoassay and you drop it in the little well, then that's just basically a small hole in immunoassays, then it's probably going to light up. But kind of rabbit trailing a little bit, people are probably more interested in an excuse list. I know in the past we've done an excuse list for getting an STD other than having sex. So we've come up with our PED excuse tier list.
Yeah, so the I suppose the most famous of these, probably thanks to Derek, more plates, more dates, is the DECA burrito. So the excuse here was that they ate a burrito and it was from an uncastrated cryptorchid boar and specifically the stomach of the animal. So that's oddly specific, but let's see, does that check out or not?
Yeah, so a cryptorchid boar, that's where the testes had not descended. So the testes are basically, they forgot to, either didn't or forgot to castrate the boar, or the perhaps there was an extra testy. Sometimes there's a third small testicle. But if you look at this explanation of this athlete who's Shelby Houlihan.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the run times there. So the 5K time, you know, 14 minutes, 23 seconds.
That's
pretty impressive.
That's pretty good.
A mile time, 4 minutes, 24 seconds. That's about what you ran in high school, right?
Yeah. A little bit better than my high school time, but not quite my lifetime best if you convert a 1600 meter time. But yeah, I didn't really run too many 1500 meters, but that is extremely good for a female athlete. It's certainly elite. Yeah. And it, by the way, I think that this is just as impressive, even though she's been banned for several years now for the nandrolone in her system. Because I truly don't think that she was using more than the average athlete, if that makes sense. So some people, when they see something impressive, in order to cope, they drink that copium drink that says, well, everybody else must be on steroids or PEDs or testosterone, because otherwise I would be that good. And that's just the ego talking. So this is still just as impressive.
Yeah, I could probably take a few nandrolones and run a 4-minute mile, right?
Sure. Yeah, keep telling yourself that. So it was analyzed by an expert, and they came up with a list of what, 7 or 8 different things that would have to happen in order for this explanation to come true. We'll put it on the screen, but I figured it'd be fun to read through these.
Yeah, so first, the athlete claimed they ordered a beef burrito, but they were served pork at the food truck despite ordering beef. So that's number one.
Second, the pork consumed would have had to be uncastrated boar. So usually the pork you consume is not uncastrated.
And then third, the uncastrated boar would have had to enter the food chain through a completely different channel. To end up in the food supply, it would have had to been cryptorchid, because there is, you know, oversight and processes for raising the boar. And it looks like at about puberty, that's pretty close to the slaughter time. Mm-hmm. So the likelihood of there being even significant hormone production in an uncastrated boar is pretty low.
Yeah. Fourth, the uncastrated boar would have had to have elite, naturally high testosterone levels, much higher than the average 6-month-old pig or a boar.
Yep. And then the athlete allegedly ate pork stomach. I don't actually know the details of why the athlete included that into their excuse. You would think that the legal team would try to be less specific. So like, oh, they consumed some pork of an unknown quantity of unknown tissue origin from an unknown pig. But they said it was the stomach. And they talk about how the, you know, stomach would be prepared. It would be stripped of the inner layer and only the muscle would remain. And even if the uncastrated boar did have elevated androgen levels, those are not found in the muscle, but only in specific parts, kidneys, testes, or liver. Pork stomach, on the contrary, has one of the lowest androgen levels.
Next, sixth, if you look at the scientific literature, people who do consume huge amounts of uncastrated boar, for example, liver or kidney from that boar, her level was still 2 to 3 times higher than the highest value.
And then seventh, the carbon isotopic signature of the 19 norandrolone detected in the urine was minus 23. So it was less carbon depleted than the standard ratio you would find in a corn-based diet-fed commercial pig, which the diet could affect that to where they would match up. And this is also why even TRT is technically not bioidentical, because it's plant-derived versus, you know, animal cholesterol-derived testosterone.
Yep.
And I think Derek has done a few videos on this. People should check those out.
Certainly.
Because it's a really interesting topic. And then what do we have last here?
Yeah, last was the chance of a cryptorchid, so undescended testicle, boar ending up in the normal supply chain is less than 1 in 10,000, on top of all of these previous things.
Yeah, so it seems extraordinarily unlikely. And I think that this is, it was a legitimate ban. I think it's like almost impossible for this to have been the case, or things would have matched up in one way or the other.
I wonder what the level would be compared to normal nandrolone levels in pregnancy, which do increase slightly. They're so small, they're hard to detect when you're not pregnant. Because some people argue that nandrolone's a bioidentical hormone, 19-nor testosterone. Mm-hmm. But I bet that even the highest level that's detected in pregnancy is much lower than anything that was being discussed here.
Yeah, I would suppose the same. So yeah, as an ovarian hormone, potentially, if you have a ton of estradiol production, you're also ramping up production of other hormones that respond to that LH signal. Mm-hmm. So plausibly, the concentration would go up. You do have a little bit of hemodilution, but I think the concentration would still go up of like per ml, like there's this much nandrolone in the system.
Do they have nandrolone suspension? Because it's kind of a weird thing for an athlete to take. Like you'd think, well, maybe she was trying to take, what is it, nandrolone phenylpropionate, which has a fast half-life, accidentally took nandrolone decanoate or DECA. So she probably thought that all of the nandrolone had washed out because she was using that shorter phenylpropionate ester. And then it turned out to be decanoate. I assume that's what happened, but maybe they make suspension. That'd be a much smarter thing to take.
Yeah, and even with the suspension, I think my understanding is that in the urinary metabolites or the metabolites that stay in your body, those could be there 12 or even 18 months.
Yep.
Probably dose dependent to some degree. So if like a female dose would probably be out more quickly. But given that this is, I guess you would think fairly common knowledge in sports doping.
Yeah.
It's, that nandrolone would not be a good choice regardless of what ester or if any ester was attached to.
Its metabolites are also suppressive. So the metabolites in nandrolone, basically what it's broken down to, even if nandrolone is not stopping and inhibiting your natural testosterone and estrogen production, its metabolites very well might. It's also known for being particularly progestogenic. It's just a very weird choice. So maybe that is one point in that she was exposed to it some other way and not that. But in all likelihood, it seems very unlikely she got it from food. And you'd think that with all of the like attorneys and whatnot at play and experts on both sides that they would think of many other options of what it could have been.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I would imagine that most of the subject matter experts are on the side of USADA and WADA. Like they already have like contracts. And obviously they can't play both sides. That'd be a conflict of interest.
Correct.
So you may be getting second tier experts to try to defend your doping allegations against the top of the top in the field, the people who are publishing and actually developing the testing. So it's kind of an uphill battle if you are trying to prove your innocence, even if you are innocent.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. We'll talk about that more with the last athlete. The next one is Ronex Caputo. But just a couple days ago, the ruling from USADA came out that Arian Knighton had, basically it does not need to be banned because of a... they do not think that he was doping with Tren, despite a positive Tren test. But of note, his attorney is the same one that represented Marion Jones and many other athletes who later admitted to doping but had gotten them off of doping. So it does seem that there's a tier list, basically, of who's who or, kind of the same thing in the legal system. You get what you pay for.
A little bit political, it sounds like. But I think I've seen reference before that even if it's an unintentional positive test, that due to the potential of a performance-enhancing benefit, they will typically give them a sort of slap on the wrist 2 years. But perhaps with the Paris Olympics coming up, they don't want to sort of put out someone who very well might medal in the 200-meter, pull down viewership and sort of have this controversy hovering over the Olympics where a lot of people are doping, but they don't want the perception to be that way.
A lot of young athletes are called the next Usain Bolt just because media loves hype, gets views, the next Usain Bolt. But Arian Knighton had certainly been dropping some really fast times for a teenager. And now I think he's 20 or 21, but he was billed as the next Usain Bolt. So I definitely could see some merit to that. In addition, there's this long history in multiple sports of athletes that retire earlier than you would think because they're burnt out or for whatever reason, but they just seem to really enjoy the sport and everything about it, even after they retire. You see this in CrossFit with Matt Frazier, who retired at a very early age. Totally possible that he pops positive or something. CrossFit headquarters wants to sweep it under the rug because they don't want to ruin their, you know, one of the most well-known athletes with Rich Froning. And they give him a nice early voluntary retirement.
Severance package.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we're not saying this happened. This is just a plausible explanation. You know, anything can and does happen. I'm sure
totally
that there are motivations for keeping things perceived as a clean, quote unquote, sport.
Yeah. And that's just an example. Usain Bolt is another example. Usain Bolt retired at a quite early age. He could have kept sprinting for at least five more years. Maybe he wouldn't have made significantly more sponsorship money, which is the main money in track, because as the enhanced games individuals point out, you get paid basically an insignificant amount for winning an Olympic medal compared to your sponsorship.
Yeah, so, and he just tore an Achilles. Did you see that?
Usain Bolt did?
Yeah, he's playing soccer now, which is football, you know, non-American football. It was a charity soccer game, and he tore his Achilles, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. I do have a feeling that at some point in my life, I'll tear an Achilles, which, if it happens,
is that why they call you the next Usain Bolt?
No, nobody has ever called me the next Usain Bolt. But it is unfortunate. But anyway, just from a high-level view, you see all these athletes retire early. Surely a lot of the reason why they do is because they're basically just told to retire. That way they don't tarnish the reputation of the entire sport.
But in sports where there are loopholes for PED use and anabolic steroid use, such as the NBA or the NFL, you do see players with careers lasting into their late 30s and even early 40s sometimes.
Yeah, I think that this
could be totally coincidence, but
no,
it's something that I do think, something that I think about from time to time.
Yep. The next athlete is Ronex Kipruto. So this is interesting, and we'll link one of the reports to his ban, but they found him by something called a biologic passport. I know Derek has talked about this at length, but basically, they just follow a CBC and a reticulocyte count. CBC is a complete blood count. They measure your hematocrit, which is the percentage of red blood cells as a total of your blood. So if it's 50%, you have 50% red blood cells, 50% plasma. They also measure your hemoglobin, which carries oxygen. They also measure your red blood cell total count, which can change due to hemoconcentration. If you're training at altitude, generally, it's just more concentrated. Whereas if you're taking erythropoietin or androgens, then it can increase kind of total blood volume as well. So it's not shrinking down your blood volume and concentrating it. But they also measure reticulocyte count, which is immature red blood cells. And they can follow that over time and estimate the chance that the fluctuations are natural or not. Just by looking at this guy's CBCs over time, yes, I've looked at a lot of CBCs. I'm not an expert in knowing if reticulocyte count and hemoglobin counts are due to EPO, which is erythropoietin, or testosterone, or other androgens. But it just from looking at them, it certainly seems likely that he was blood doping.
Maybe he was using ketones. Ketones can raise EPO.
He did say he has a drinking problem. He did not specify if it's alcohol. Oh, wait, no, he said it's alcohol. Maybe it was hard ketones. Along with the alcohol.
Yeah, it would be a better alternative. So he has a number of really top-notch times. He holds the world record, I believe, still for the road 10K, 26 minutes, 24 seconds. Really impressive times, yep. Sub-hour, half marathon, almost 13-minute flat 5K on a track.
Yep.
Really impressive times. And so in the context of these times, he has a biologic passport that makes it look like he's using EPO. That's sort of the conclusion that they came to. Mm-hmm. And the excuse was, how are you able to do this? I have a drinking problem. And that's not to poke fun at anyone that has an alcohol problem, yeah. But that is the literal excuse that was used in this court hearing.
And it appears that he does and did, sadly, have a drinking problem, which perhaps doesn't make it more or less likely that his biologic passport was correct or incorrect. But many of his urine samples, I guess in 2020, there was 70% that had alcohol metabolites. And him and his team even designed a type of experiment where he drinks alcohol, sees what things look like, and then he does not drink alcohol and sees what things look like to try to replicate some of these changes.
Yeah, and it's interesting. One thing I didn't see mentioned was the possibility of a alcohol-induced apnea. Mm-hmm. That is something where you're creating a hypoxic environment. Plausibly, that could spike EPO up a little bit, but I don't think that's going to put you at approaching 18 was his hemoglobin number. Hematocrit would have been, 50 plus at that point, something that's a little bit suspicious.
Yep.
Training at altitude and sleeping at altitude is also generally hypoxic, and I would imagine a combination of alcohol and sleeping at altitude would make apnea and hypoxia more likely.
Yeah.
And then I actually don't know the answer to this, but the ETG, the alcohol metabolite, would that also show up as a ketohol metabolite, the 1,3-butanediol?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Acetaldehyde is the first major metabolite of alcohol. Ethanol to acetaldehyde, and then acetaldehyde dehydrogenase will do that. And acetaldehyde is kind of a type, similar to a ketone body.
What about an SGLT2? Are SGLT2s on the banned list? Because those can also increase EPO.
I'm assuming that SGLT2s and GLP-1s are banned, probably with pretty easy exemption.
Yeah, but I think you would be hard-pressed to make the case that he was a diabetic. Although, with all the intense training, you very well could run a pre-diabetic A1C,
yeah,
even being very insulin sensitive.
Just from red blood cell turnover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting case, and a lot of times these aren't at face value. And WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Association, did a great job of basically trying to deconstruct this and figure out the right answer. The amount of time and the amount of people that are paid just for this one case is staggering. I would not be shocked if they spent $50,000 to $100,000 paying all of these people for their time and traveling back and forth and this and that, and doing all this testing. I would not be surprised if this one case took that amount of money.
Yeah. And they do hear out athletes because they don't want to falsely convict anyone. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that they have the facts right. And I would say most of the time when someone has a positive test, they are intentionally doping. I don't think that's too high of a bar. I think greater than 50% of the time, if you test positive, you're probably doping.
So it's bad for the athletes to test for their livelihood, really. And then it's also bad for the athletes not to do any testing. Are enhanced games and other organizations setting an arbitrary hemoglobin limit? For example, if you're over 19, we don't care the reason, you're banned? Or how do you set guardrails safely for this, other than telling people that they need a physician exception for anything? And then if there's an exception for TRT, then it can go up to 200 milligrams per week. I think that's the general idea that a lot of sports leagues use that do allow TRT exemptions.
Yeah, and that's a reasonable sort of guardrail, if you will. But I don't think the enhanced games wants any guardrails. I think they're very much, at least forward facing, publicly facing, they are sort of a no limits, let's see what enhanced human physiology can do. I wouldn't be surprised if at the very first games that there aren't actually records broken. That would be kind of hilarious. But I wouldn't be surprised because you're not going to have, perhaps not for the first games, sort of the best of the best. Maybe the elites are going to sort of watch and see how much traction does this get. They don't want to jeopardize their current sponsorships, mm-hmm, or their Olympic status, being qualified, passing through the Olympic trials and so forth, to jump on board something new. So they may watch, sort of sit on the sidelines the first year, and then if things, mm-hmm, are really moving that direction and it's blowing up,
yeah,
then maybe year two you sort of do get that elite tier and, mm-hmm, start seeing some records broken.
Do they have Sinclair scores or similar? I think Sinclair scores are what they call powerlifting scores. That kind of like equates different classes. Do they have something for shooting sports and archery? Because those are some records that could be broken if you allowed any sort of beta blocker.
I don't think that they have all of the Olympic sports. I know they're doing track and field for sure. Not sure about combat sports. That's one where you may be less inclined to compete because there's a greater chance of injury if somebody is blasting a bunch of gear and punches you in the head. But yeah, imagine that your heart rate is at 25 beats per minute and you're shooting at a target. So you've got no, your parasympathetic signaling is through the roof. For sure, you're going to be able to break some records.
Yeah. Just have someone have, atropine on hand or something?
Anyway. Hopefully it's a qualified medical team to handle any emergency situations. Yeah. Usually, I feel like at a lot of athletic competitions, it's like the team is there. They're not really doing anything because it's very unlikely. Even though you do see sudden collapses from time to time and you have to be prepared for those, it's a very low incidence. At the enhanced games, I bet there would be a higher incidence of like medical urgencies or medical emergencies. Yeah.
Maybe that's why a lot of MDs are hesitant to volunteer for their medical team.
Yeah. I don't know how you would treat something like that with some herbals or functional testing.
Yeah, probably not. Do they have World's Strongest Man competition, strongman competitors?
Because
just imagine all the records that could be smashed if they allowed PEDs.
Yeah, I think weightlifting is one. So like Half Thor could just walk on and shatter the world record for deadlift.
Powerlifting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess they already have untested powerlifting.
Yeah.
Those strongman competitors, they don't use any PEDs, do they?
No, they're just high T men.
Just imagine like Thor, Brian Shaw, or Mitch Hooper on PEDs.
Yeah, they would be way bigger and way stronger. I did see Eddie Hall was in a combat sport recently.
I saw that too.
Fighting two people at once in a cage. Sort of a little bit of like a circus element to it. But that was, I didn't perceive him as someone who would do something like that, but it was pretty unique. Interesting to watch.
Yeah, hopefully he got paid well for doing that, so that'd be good.
But I think alcohol is perhaps the reason that Ronix Caputo got caught. Perhaps if he was, doping as he had historically prior to 2020, that this wouldn't have happened. Maybe he got a common respiratory infection that happened around that time and then sort of upped the ante. Yep. He's like, well, my nutrition isn't dialed in. I'm using alcohol. I need something to sort of boost me through. So the combination of those two, I suspect, is why he actually was detected.
Yeah, I do feel bad for him because this is his livelihood and profession. And he's probably thinking to himself, I'm not using any more erythropoietin or whatever he was using. I'm not using any more than all of the other people in my same like echelon of elite distance running.
Maybe he would be the face of the enhanced games.
Yeah.
Tested positive. It depends on how much he wants to stick to his I didn't use any drugs story versus pivoting into something financially lucrative and potentially breaking. Imagine he has a world record already.
If he starts
Imagine
using
if he can use
drugs,
all the EPO and androgens he wants to without worrying about having to beat testing. Perhaps they put him on some disulfiram to handle the alcohol problem. That could be a PED if you're preventing somebody from taking an alcohol.
Yeah, certainly better performance. That would be good for his health as well.
Some health optimization sprinkled in there.
Yeah. Runners and swimmers, especially distance runners, are notorious for being at higher risk of alcohol use disorder.
Can you get iron infusions? Alcohol. Is that a legal WADA certified thing? Because I would imagine
I know you can't get any infusion whatsoever for UFC.
Yeah, anything over 100 mLs, I think they consider outside of their guidelines and regulations. But surely if you have an iron deficiency induced by your training, all that foot strike, then maybe they're able to do that. If not, then that's a PED in and of itself.
Yeah. I know Ryan Hall has talked about this, and I know a lot of female runners or anybody with the female athlete triad could benefit from that. We've kind of briefly talked about Arian Knight in a bit, but it'd be nice to remind people just how ludicrously fast his personal records are. Under 10 seconds for the 100 meter, 19.49 for the 200 meter, which I believe is one of, got to be probably a top 10 time all time. Him, Noah Lyles, of course, Usain Bolt, Kenny Benderick. There's a lot of elite 200 meter runners. that have not run under 19.5, that's for sure. But I believe those have. And then 400 meter, he's not really a specialist, only 46 seconds. Still a little bit faster than me, but pretty great, especially considering his young age.
Yes, and his story is unique in that they seem to have allegedly, you know, we don't have all the details yet, but reached out and contacted this bakery or meat shop in Florida somewhere.
Yes.
Where he consumed oxtail. And I pulled up the macros on oxtail. Why you would consume this as a, I guess, explosive power athlete, I'm not sure. It's almost purely fat. So no really measurable carbohydrate, 9 grams of protein. This is a 4 ounce servings, and then 80 grams of fat. So a lot of calories, I suppose, if you're just getting calories in for the sake of getting calories in from mm-hmm. heavy training, or maybe he just likes oxtail.
Yeah.
And that's okay too.
Was it a soup or is it just plain oxtail?
I don't know. But in the context of the allowable content of trenbolone in tissues, this is a very fatty cut, as we've outlined here. Yep. And if you look at the tissue content in muscle, so if you had a perhaps a flank steak or something like that, that's very much just pure muscle, 80 parts per million. Liver, 240 parts per million. Kidneys and fat, 480 parts per million. So this would be one of the tissues where the trenbolone could bioaccumulate. You know, they put the pellet in the ear of the animal usually. Mm-hmm. Maybe if a new guy was on the job and put it in the tail,
yeah,
that could happen also.
Write that down. It's yeah. a good idea.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. But I suppose this one is a little bit more plausible. Maybe there's some politics, optics things, or maybe the experts just looked at it and said, yeah this seems like a pretty cut and dry case. So I am, as of today, going to go on a pure oxtail carnivore diet for 30 days.
Oxtail. Wow. Your macros are going to be crazy. 3,000 calories of fat per day.
I think it would be keto, technically.
Yeah. How many grams of protein could you get with, let's see, 1,500 calories, 3,000 calories? You would have less than 40 grams of protein with 3,000 calories.
Yeah. So to get, a pound would put me at about 40 grams of protein. 2 pounds would put me at 80 grams of protein, but that would be
3,000 calories per pound.
Yeah, that's wild. That would put me at 7,000 calories just to get near 7,000 calories just to get 80 grams of protein.
Yeah.
But the trend would offset the decrease in protein intake.
Yeah, because you can, as long as you take trend and growth hormone, you can eat ice cream and pizza and apparently oxtail and be shredded. There was a link to this article that discussed the hypocrisy of the United States. USADA is the United States Anti-Doping Association, and then WADA is the world body. And it is considering if it should appeal this decision. So an appeal to this would likely be a similar situation to the Ronex Caputo, with WADA calling in huge amounts of experts and kind of doing, I would say, more than their due diligence. They do a great job of investigating the details and publicly publishing them. But this one is going to be very difficult to definitively prove against. It's kind of like when you're video reviewing something in a sport, usually it has to be definitive evidence to overturn the initial decision. Probably not enough to overturn this initial decision, especially since WADA has made previous decisions like allowing dozens of Chinese swimmers who test positive for a substance that increases blood flow to the heart. They let dozens of them go because of a similar situation. So there's been a bit of a precedent set.
Yeah, and maybe they are relaxing regulations a bit, because if you have more athletes testing positive, it's probably not good from an optics standpoint. So maybe they are letting a few through the cracks and thinking, well, we're still going to catch the obvious cases where people are really pushing the boundaries.
If they ban Arian Knighton for 10 years or something like that, and he did start doping full bore and go to the enhanced games, he probably would break Usain Bolt's 100 meter record. Because I
200
think
meter. 100 meter.
Maybe not 100 meter.
Yeah, he's a 200 meter specialist.
He very well could break. I think Usain Bolt ran 19.1 for 200 meters, and Arian Knighton's already ran 19.4, and he's
got another 10 years to train.
Teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if he doped full bore, he very well might. So if there was no such thing as the enhanced games, would USADA and WADA have banned Knighton? Maybe so.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't know if it's a pressure situation where they don't want to release any top athletes over to the enhanced games. Yep. Maybe if this was like a guy who was top 50, you know, somewhere between 40 and 50 and might make it to the Olympics, they would come down a little bit more harshly.
Yeah.
It's really hard to say. Hopefully there wouldn't be influence like that, but
there's no way that there isn't influence. Yeah. There is always influence.
Everyone is under the influence.
Yep. Except us. We're completely unbiased.
Yeah. So now on to our next business opportunity. I have some notes here. Mm-hmm. We're going to start a grass-fed, uncastrated boar on HCG regenerative farm. It's a lot of buzzwords in there.
Regenerative farm, yes.
So,
yeah. Where we naturally optimize the testosterone of the boars.
With HCG.
Yes.
Because not enough signaling at the LH receptor is the root cause of not having enough testosterone in uncastrated boars.
Which leads to not having enough
nandrolone. I should say nandrolone.
Yep.
Yeah. So why are they grass-fed?
So that the ratio of carbon isotope in the nandrolone matches what you would inject. Because if you do this and you don't feed them, I don't know how much grass they'll eat, something that has a more normal carbon isotope ratio.
Yeah, there are different sugars. I looked into this. If you feed them like sugar cane, that actually will give you a less depleted, or corn will give them a less depleted carbon ratio, which is problematic because then it doesn't match up. But if you feed
23% them 23% or so is what you want.
Something like a beet sugar or a grass, you know, something like that.
Sugar.
There's 3C and 4C plants, and those things will actually give you a more depleted ratio, which is what you want if you're trying to match up what historically athletes' urines who have allegedly taken nandrolone look like. So this will actually be a dual purpose business. If any athletes have tested positive, they can reach out to the business, and we will send a meat sample to USADA, and they can...
Someone's going to clip this.
They can say, oh, yeah, looks like you just ate some contaminated meat. But our other purpose will be that we sell performance-enhancing steaks.
Mm-hmm. For research purposes.
For research purposes only. Just like research chemicals you can't use. We know people do buy these and use these. We do not recommend that. But... in the same vein, we would be selling these steaks that people should not consume. They should just do research on them, perhaps feed them to lab rats and so forth.
Like peptides.
Yeah.
Your lab rat that takes all those peptides that you order.
You can feed him some high quality regenerative farm, grass-fed, uncastrated boar on HCG steak.
Yes. I think that's great. And then after that offering, of course, we will want to farm ox and cattle.
Yeah.
And definitely want to put the pellets in tail. That is a great idea. We will remember that one for sure.
Intentionally. Yeah. And we have a number of other excuses here. So we've talked about the Deca burrito, oxtail. What about some of these other ones here?
Yeah. So, first Winstrol or Winstrol or Winnie. Maybe. And by the way, this is an excuse that has actually been used in a criminal court. Is someone said that they kissed an individual that this individual, she had previously consumed a controlled substance. Maybe it was cocaine. Maybe it was something else. Perhaps you're kissing your bodybuilder girlfriend who is taking Cenazolol troches because she does not want the hepatotoxicity of Winstrol. So that's a little bit lower tier, but it is plausible.
So smart enough to protect her liver, not smart enough to protect her boyfriend.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
Although that's a lot to ask. That could possibly happen.
If you're dating somebody and perhaps they're not aware that they're in a tested competition, maybe this person just met this person and didn't know that they just popped a Winstrol troche before they went out.
Yeah. And we use Winstrol troches in this example because if we used oxandrolone troches, people would say oxandrolone has zero hepatotoxicity and it will kill your kidneys, which maybe we'll talk about at some other time. But yeah, anyway, the next one, you know, perhaps eating some horse vertebrae, testing positive for equipoise or EQ.
Yeah, or horse kidneys. Is this an excuse that's actually been used, or is this one
not been used?
So we made this one up, but
extrapolated from the oxtail excuse.
Horse kidney, equipoise, very commonly used in race horses. Any tissue that would bioaccumulate a lot of that equipoise would make sense to consume if you, or use it as an excuse to consume, mm-hmm. or that you consume this if you tested positive for EQ, which I believe is also a. Would be a great choice for enhanced games if you're not taking any risks into account, but would be a relatively poor choice for tested competition because I think it has a very long half-life as well.
Yep. Yeah, certainly not ideal for tested competitions. Next is HCG. So you've probably heard certain biohackers and influencers, we don't have to name them, advocate for drinking urine. HCG isn't really bioavailable orally, but I suppose if you absorbed the HCG from a pregnant lady's urine buccally, like dip, then you could get some HCG bioavailability that way.
Maybe. Yeah, plausibly. And then if you were doing your urine test immediately after you had just held the HCG-rich urine buccally.
Yep.
Plausible.
Within a day or two.
What if you have, I guess you could say that you had an HCG secreting tumor. Very rare.
Oh, that's an even better one. Yep.
But then I think you would have to have some medical documentation. You can't just find a random, you know, burned out doc somewhere and be like, oh yeah, I took out their tumor.
Yeah, often they don't cancerous. Have it anymore. Yeah, mm-hmm. HCG secreting tumors are not good.
So not something you would want to induce.
Yeah, it is an excuse, but it's lower on the tier list just because it would be terrible to have that. Clomid, a lot of people pop positive for clomiphene or enclomiphene. I believe John Jones did. Contaminated pills is an excuse, but again, people probably know that as an athlete, part of your job is not taking anything that's not certified for sport or whatnot. So contaminated pills isn't really an excuse, but I guess it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I think this is probably, at least when I was looking through some cases, the most common excuse is that the pills were contaminated, supplements were contaminated, and the idea is it's the same facility is producing these medications or research chemicals or SARMs that also make my ashwagandha or whatever, you know, hormone optimization thing that I'm taking. Mm-hmm. What about this birth control here? You can take birth control. It's not performance enhancing.
I'm not sure if it's on banned lists or whatnot, but birth control can be found in the water. And people in the country like jigging for frogs and having frog legs and whatnot. So make sure not to eat any of those frickin' gay frogs because they might have banned substances like birth control pills or other endocrine disruptors that are actually performance not enhancing. I suppose it depends on the birth control pill. Some of them could be arguably at least performance neutral, like levonorgestrel or norgestrel. But some of them, like drospirenone, could certainly cause feminization characteristics. But we've done one podcast on endocrine disruptors, which we can also link.
The guppies, right?
Yeah, the guppies
on runoff trend. From the cattle farm.
Yep, yep. A biosimilar amount. Given the oral bioavailability of things like these, well, not so much birth control pills. Those are actually metabolized pretty quickly once they get in the environment, which is good. They're actually pretty infrequently found in the water supply. And I even tested my own water, and it did not have any ethanol estradiol in it.
So any trenbolone? Nice.
I don't think it tested for trenbolone. Ah. Yeah, it tested for a lot of SSRIs. It tested for a lot of mood stabilizers, and it mm-hmm. tested for some synthetic progestins and ethanol estradiol, and there was none of those in. Do be cognizant of other things in your environment that can be performance enhancing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And with the levonorgestrel, I would say performance neutral. It is slightly androgenic. So if you took a high enough dose, I still don't think it would be helpful because you would end up essentially castrating yourself.
Yes.
You would have feedback inhibition and you would lose the small amount of testosterone the ovaries do make.
Yep.
As well as your estradiol production. And both of those things are going to help with adaptation to exercise. So as of right now, I don't think that there is a birth control PED out there.
Yep. Agreed.
Now, I got a bonus excuse here for you. And I have the documents right here. So you can tell me what you think of this excuse. Let's say that I am a runner and I pop positive for Ostarine or Enobosarm. I know you're an Enobosarm enthusiast, not in use, but coming to the clinical literature.
I thought I was a hater.
But I say, hey, Kyle, can I borrow your hamstring sleeves for my run? And you say, yes. And then shortly thereafter, I test positive for Ostarine. Legitimate or not?
Hamstring sleeves. I would assume not. Has that been studied in animal models?
Take a look at the document. Rats with hamstring sleeves.
Ah, how nice. Sure enough, a male athlete challenged the results. His hair and nail tests returned negative. He admitted to using two neoprene hamstring sleeves of another athlete who confessed of using Ostarine. This was confirmed in his hair, fingernail, and toenail. Wow, they checked all three of those? Couldn't they have just checked one of them and seen that it was positive?
Yeah, and looking into this paper, there are some athletes who are a bald or do not allow hair testing for religious reasons, but there's no, as of right now, religious exemption for fingernails or toenails. So I suppose they wanted to gather the most evidence, but it was really interesting to me that the fingernails had such high concentration relative to the toenails.
Yeah, very interesting.
So that probably indicates more recent use because
maybe he was
toenails
getting the powder from the SARM website under his fingernails. That's funny. Or maybe he purposely wasn't taking Ostarine, but he wanted to take a fall for the guy. So he put a bunch of it in his hair and nails.
Yeah. I think it's interesting they use the word abuse.
They probably wash it.
They say that this other athlete was abusing the Ostarine.
Maybe he was in a clinical trial for his prostate cancer. You never know.
Yeah. Stranger things have happened. But I thought that was an extremely unlikely case because I saw the headline there and I was like, oh, that's interesting. This person tried to claim. And it goes on to say that they actually took sections of the actual hamstring sleeves in question and analyzed them in the lab.
Wow.
So apparently you can absorb excreted either metabolites or actual Ostarine that is from someone else's sweat through your skin into your system enough to be picked up on urine testing.
That's why I'm getting stronger at that new powerlifting gym.
Yeah. Are you borrowing somebody's straps?
I don't want to talk about it publicly. not at a new powerlifting gym, just a new CrossFit gym. And as people know, powerlifters abuse PEDs, but CrossFitters don't.
So only 2%.
I have nothing to worry about.
I think it's like 2% of CrossFitters use PEDs.
I'm sure it's less than that.
The studies show.
Yeah. That's what the documents and studies show. Well, thank you for that case. That's very interesting. My love of Ostarine is slightly less given that contamination seems possible with hamstring sleeves or knee sleeves. That is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess a transdermal form of Ostarine would work. Just for that stubborn belly fat.
So if it's for breast cancer, can you do transdermal Ostarine on the breasts?
I would assume so. There is a transdermal tamoxifen metabolite, I believe, that's been studied for breast cancer and maybe gynecomastia.
Can you put Ostarine pellets in the prostate? Like they put
radiation pellets? Yeah, plausibly. I mean, just depends on how long they're going to be able to be released. And I think the intention of the Ostarine would be to provide the systemic effects so you don't lose muscle or bone density.
To some degree, and to antagonize adrenal androgens in the prostate.
Yeah, that's fair as well.
Yeah. And systemically to crush SHBG decrease delivery.
Yeah, a pellet would definitely, with that localized effect, outcompete the sort of secondary androgens we think of that are trying to bind and exert their effects there.
And that's a good point because compared to oral Ostarine, it actually might be less helpful because it's not going to crush SHBG as well. So,
so you do both.
Crushing the SHBG.
Or if you did a suppository, you'd think you would get higher concentrations in the prostate, being kind of local there.
Yeah.
Maybe not a huge degree. I don't know if anybody studied that. They should.
Yeah. Maybe people would be willing to. People with prostate cancer are willing to study about anything to get quality of life back.
Yeah.
So that's
absolutely
including letting lower grade prostate cancers potentially grow. So hopefully that is something that will be studied. At some point, we do have a urologist that we want to have on the podcast, which we're very excited to talk about lots of various topics. So if anybody has ideas of other questions for him, please let us know in the comments.
Yeah. And we'll put a feeler out on social media, I'm sure, before that podcast happens, hopefully in the near future.
Yep. I think that about covers it today. So as always, thank you for your time. And yeah, let us know any other thoughts that you had. Hopefully you were entertained. And if you think of any other excuses for PED use that are especially high in the tier list, please let us know. As always, may God bless you with health and happiness.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.